Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. Welcome to the program. It's Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. Our program in its 14th year on 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Just within the hour, two very big stories locally breaking. The first one, United States Representative Raul Grijalva has cancer. He's being treated for cancer. He had been dealing with, I believe since February, with what with pneumonia. In fact, he had been scheduled to be on this show on Friday, but did have to cancel because he was undergoing treatment for pneumonia. And now we learned today he has cancer. The type of cancer was not disclosed, but his staff says he is continuing to work remotely and is doing his job. That's what we're hearing from his staff, of Congressman Grijalva. The other very big story, University of Arizona President Robert Robbins announcing just a few minutes ago he's stepping down when his contract ends in 2026 or before, if the University of Arizona Board of Regents select another new president. Robbins was the 22nd, or still is, of course, the 22nd president of the University of Arizona. The move comes as the school deals with their financial crisis, including a $140 million shortfall. Governor Hobbs has previously criticized President Robbins, the university, and the Arizona Board of Regents for what she called a lack of progress in dealing with the crisis. Let's bring in right now Dr. Dave Wells, the research director for the Grand Canyon Institute based in Phoenix, which is a nonprofit and nonpartisan think tank up in Phoenix. Dr. Wells, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you.
Well, also, of course, there's the issue with the grant of the University of Arizona with the online university, the global nonprofit, the university's acquisition for the for-profit Ashford University in 2020, and your institute has looked at this extensively. Do you think this might have played a role in President Robbins deciding to step aside? After all, the Arizona Republic found recently that President Robbins hired a lobbyist who tried to persuade California's attorney general to get rid of millions of dollars in fines against that fraudulent online school that the UA acquired. Some of your thoughts, Dr. Wells.
Yeah, I read that article as well, and I thought it's really telling that, because again, the reason that Robbins was trying to acquire the Ashford University that they renamed as University of Arizona Global Campus was to use it as a way to raise revenue for the university, and it was already, again, ripping off students. So that doesn't, to me, that never computed as part of the university's mission, and the students weren't from Arizona. And so, yeah, I was really disturbed to see, I mean, not surprised, because obviously the impact on that ultimately led to Zovio, who was the operator of Ashford, going bankrupt. So that 15-year agreement that U of A signed back in 2020 with Zovio went out the window pretty quickly. I think he had really poor foresight about that, because the online market has gotten very competitive. The enrollments were going way down already on top of all these fraudulent practices that Zovio had been involved in. So I just think it was really poor judgment on his part. And I'm glad to hear that he's stepping down, because I think the Board of Regents should have been asking him to do that months ago.
California sued that online college for luring students into debt under false pretenses. While President Robbins has insisted the acquisition didn't hurt the university's finances, documents show this online school's president, told the California AG's office that the penalties could cause financial and reputational harm to the U of A. The school is operating at a $2.4 million deficit. That's according, I was just quoting from the Arizona Agenda, which, along with their sister online service, the Tucson Agenda, I believe, are doing a great job. But go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I loved reading the agenda. Mm-hmm. It's just because what needed to happen with the U of A Global Campus was an investment of funds to make it a more appropriate kind of university than it actually was. Because they hired almost exclusively part-time faculty, paid them very little. These kind of universities spent a lot of time on marketing and so forth. But yeah, they had promised students degrees that actually didn't lead to the jobs that they were told they would get, and all kinds of really horrible things that were well documented by the courts, and that's why they were fined so substantially. This is for practices that went from about due to the statute of limitations from, I think, of 2011 to 2017, and so there's an open question about what was going on after that. So OVO says they addressed those issues. But yeah, it's just something that's like, why would you want to get involved with this kind of thing? It'd be better to take the online aspect of the University of Arizona, which already exists, and really devote resources to that to try to grow it and grow that part of your university, as opposed to bringing on this sort of real malignant kind of university itself.
And you have said, your institute, that the regents have really been spinning this story.
Yeah, so when they, the regents, I mean, to be fair to the regents, if you're a regent, it's hard. You don't know what's going on inside. If you're on any kind of board of directors, you're often reliant on the people who are in the executive positions to sort of tell you what's going on. But the regents weren't able, but this, some of the stuff actually wasn't that hard to find. I mean, we found all this stuff, and we weren't like insiders or anything like that back in 2020. So it's pretty clear the regents could have done a much better oversight. And we tried to communicate to the regents in November of 2020 that there were a lot of issues here. And so I think, yeah, the regents should have not trust. Sometimes regents just trust administrators more than they should. They should have more of an independent judgment, and I think that's where the regents have fallen short. And they put out a letter, I think, in February that really tried to sort of whitewash the whole thing and say how wonderful Ashford was when it's clearly not. I think this, you know, there have been changes at the Board of Regents. We have a new chair for the Board of Regents and so forth. So I think, you know, hopefully they're going to be looking at that. But that's always a challenge. That's why I think the faculty role is really important. The University of Arizona faculty were very outspoken about their concerns about this, but they didn't have the power to stop the deal. But the regents did. And I think it's really important for the regents to actually listen to the faculty when they have more inside information like that.
So now, Dr. Dave Wells, research director at Grand Canyon Institute, what happens to this acquisition, and how do they get out from under it, with Robbins on the way out the door, presumably a new president, and a new, as you point out, there's a new president of the Arizona Board of Regents. So how do they now approach this in selling it off, or how would that work?
Yeah, I don't think they can sell it off. I mean, I think what's going to happen is they need to work with the faculty, because the idea is to bring the University of Arizona Global Campus into University of Arizona fully, because essentially it still had been sort of separated from that, which means the faculty will become part of it. And they're going to keep some of the degree programs. They'll remove others. What I expect will also happen is the enrollment for the University of Arizona Global Campus will continue to decline. I mean, it's already declined by about a third since they've acquired it. And so essentially become a smaller and smaller entity. But it's going to be challenged, because, I mean, for it to be done properly, it needs to have money invested in it as opposed to money taken out of it. But I think, you know, that's going to be a process that will probably take up through probably the rest of Robbins' tenure, if he's here there through the end of the fiscal year 26. They'll be combined, but it'll be a much smaller entity, so it won't be as big of a deal as it was when they first got it. That's my general guess, but I think they have to work really carefully with the faculty to figure out that process of getting curriculums in line and figuring out what they want to keep and what parts they want to discard of the University of Arizona Global Campus.
Meanwhile, that Department of Education order to the U of A to repay the Ashford loan debt, that's not going away, Dave Wells.
No, I don't think so. So they have Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of financial consequences that go with that, and you know, should have been well aware of all these risks and so forth that can go with it. Yeah, there's a lot of negative financial parts of it, but the best I can do now is, since they've already sort of bought onto it, is figure out the best path forward, which is trying to figure out ways to integrate the better parts of it and try to make it a more functional entity that actually serves students well.
All right, Dr. Dave Wells, before you go, tell our listeners about how they can find out more about Grand Canyon Institute.
Oh, then go to our website at the GrandCanyonInstitute.org, and we're going to be putting out more numbers this month related to the ESA Universal Vouchers and the Student Tax Credit Organization reports that we're currently working on, as well as we monitor the state budget, which is going to be a big challenge going forward.
That actually was that was going to be our topic today, about a voucher situation, but of course this news about President Robbins submitting his resignation. But we'll get you back on to Dave to talk in the coming weeks about the vouchers.
That sounds great.
Thank you. All right, Dr. Dave Wells, Research Director at the nonprofit and nonpartisan Grand Canyon Institute. All right, let's talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery. Always a pleasure to talk about them. They are open right now for lunch. You could have an alcoholic beverage now with your lunch, or you could have one, little wine or champagne and orange juice, a mimosa with your breakfast. Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com, open Tuesday through Sunday. Doors open at 6:30 in the morning. We'll be right back with Shelley Fishman and a very emphatic thumbs down on the markets today. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And I'm privileged to be able to contact Shelly at this time every Tuesday. Hey, Shell, how are you?
Okay, and on market days like this, people do wow. sometimes call and say, help!
What a news day, my goodness. So we've really had two bad days on the markets, and I think it totals up to be, it's over, certainly over 2% on the Dow.
I don't think it's quite that bad,
but
it ain't good.
It's
The difference between a point and a half and 2 points.
We've had some other Tuesdays in the past where we've had some bad news, but you were saying to me before we went on the air, there doesn't seem to be any real news triggering this.
Right, and as you know, I get upset when I can see a fundamental reason for the market moving in a direction or another direction, and if there's no fundamental reason, then I just kind of scratch it off to maybe the market's a little bit overbought or a little bit oversold, or maybe there's a rumor going around, and I think you mentioned, Bill, that you heard some stuff on news media that
yes.
we won't mention.
I did hear.
That talks to the, you know, some likelihood or probability that despite what Mr. Powell, the Fed chairman, said after the last Fed meeting, that maybe there won't be a rate cut
in June.
Even though he said, well, look for three more this year. So,
but
you know,
get that out there in
right.
the media, and that's oh, here we go.
Precisely. Nothing fundamental that I can find has happened. And so as far as I'm concerned, this is just another up and down day. And, you know, by the end of the week, who knows, we could be back where we were.
Interesting piece in the Washington Post I wanted to talk to you about. It was authored by Heather Long. The title, Here's Why Americans Under 40 Are So Disillusioned with Capitalism. This goes along with some polling that I've seen that shows that when people under 40 are asked about capitalism, there's a sizable group that's not all has not bought in, let's put it that way.
Right. And one of the things that caught my eye about this particular headline is that they're not just disillusioned with the current state of the economy or have complaints about all the nonsense that's going around in our politics, but rather they're disillusioned with capitalism. Now, that could be just phrase-making on the part of the headline writers at the Washington Post, but it really did get me thinking about, first of all, or I should say, thinking again about generational differences and, you know, Gen X and baby boomers and Gen Yers. If you think about people under 40, they came of age from a jobs perspective and from a kind of a lifestyle perspective as adults during the time of the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
And so what their experience as adults has been is, first of all, a near catastrophe in the economy, and then a very slow recovery out of that. And so if, you know, you're in your mid-20s and you've just finished college or maybe just finished, some sort of vocational training, and you're trying to get a job and inflation is high, and by the way, these same Americans under 40 have now seen two stretches of inflation, nowhere near as high
as
the 70s,
that we've
but
seen.
Nevertheless, you know, two periods of inflation, several recessions in their lifetime. And so they're looking at the system and saying, is this so great? You know, how are we supposed to succeed if prices are going up and if our ability to get jobs is somewhat, you know, restrained? And, you know, is this the best system available? And, you know, the question then in my mind is, you know, the old Churchill question, you know, it's the worst system you can think of except for all the others.
Exactly. What are the alternatives?
Right.
What
now,
are the, what are, okay.
You can
ahead.
Lean, you know, you can lean in either direction.
Sure.
You can go toward,
you can, you know,
full out,
and, yeah,
you know, full out capitalism with less regulation and less rules and more, you know, free for all, let the capitalists do their thing. That's one way to look at a possible solution.
Then there's the Scandinavian system,
which is still capitalism.
Capitalism.
But much higher regulation.
Social welfare.
Much more
programs.
Social welfare, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an American under 40 who has the time to think about these kinds of issues, and by the way, I'm assuming that Heather Long has done some research for this article that would, you know, indicate that she's not just guessing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she's under 40 herself.
Very well be.
Okay.
But if you talk to people who are experiencing the kind of economic doldrums that she's discussing, you really wonder what it is she's hearing from these folks. And when I read her article, she immediately goes to retirement and retirement planning. Now, that's a very important thing to consider, because you and I have talked, Bill, about the effect of 401ks and the effect of having retirement plans not be sponsored by corporations anymore, but essentially be owned and controlled by the employee. The problem there, of course, is it creates a lack of loyalty from the employee to the employer, and the flip side of that is lack of loyalty from the employer to the employee, so that you don't get the same commitment to longevity in a job, the same commitment to education, et cetera, that you got when I was growing up.
Yeah, you're not going to get the generational type of jobs where people's generation after
40 years in a gold watch.
There you go.
Yeah. So and there's also, and she mentions it in the article, there's some propensity on the part of younger folks to blame our generation because we had it good. You know,
we had the baby boomers.
Blame the baby boomers, you know. We had free education, we had a lot of enthusiasm on the part of you know, post-war sure. generations to really make the economy grow. Our educations were taken care of. Our retirements were taken care of. And in many, many ways, our health care was taken care of. But as those things got withdrawn from our capitalist society, our form of capitalism, and it became more and more the function of the individual to take care of those things on their own, that, you know, became quite a burden and continues to be quite a burden. I mean, I hear, gosh, I was with a doctor just last week who was, while he was manipulating my back to ease some pain.
Osteomedicine.
Yeah, right. And mm-hmm. he was talking about the amount of debt that he had to incur to finish his medical school and also residency. And, you know, he came up with a number that just, you know, if I wasn't going to fall on the floor from what he was doing to me.
Did you say 200, you know,
it was
200,000?
Very, it was more than that.
Wow.
And you know, he doesn't believe that he'll be out of debt from his student debt till he retires.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, you know, I think about the fact that that was nothing I ever had to worry about. Now, I didn't go to Harvard. I didn't go to Yale. I went to City College. City College was free if you were a resident of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I was in New York State. I could have gone to, you know, one of the state university campuses. That would also have been, guess what?
Free.
Free. If
no
I lived in California, same thing. So that... That isn't way, you know, no longer the case. You talk about the president of the U of A.
Yeah.
The charter of the U of A, which is a land-grant university, is that the tuition should be as close to free as possible. It ain't.
It
I mean, you know, you're talking about $14,000-$15,000.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's a semester or a year. I think it might be a year. But, you know, 5 years, because now it takes 5 years to get through that university, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden you got $70,000 worth of debt. And by the way, that doesn't include a room and board and mm-hmm. books and all of that kind of stuff. So yes, the earlier generations had advantages that the Gen Xers, Gen Yers rather, or the millennials don't have, and they resent it. And they're right to resent it. And finding ways to fix what's broken is very, very often, a matter of policy. And policy is very difficult to enact. Policy changes are very difficult to enact in a system where the politics is so, you know, is so polarized. So, yeah, what's going to happen with Social Security? You ask a 40-year-old if their Social Security system is going to be there for them when they're ready to retire, and they look at you like you're nuts.
Yeah, they don't buy in.
We know that in 2029, we could have a 30% cut unless something is done.
Yes.
And yet, you know, our politicians can't figure out
how to fix it. Been
kicking it down the road. So, you know, it really got my attention. And as you can hear in my voice, it really got my dander up a little bit too.
All right. We love it. Very enthusiastic, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, I hope you have a great rest of the week.
You too, Bill. All right.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sorita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sorita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. beautiful time of year to go over to Green Things, get some gardening done for the spring. Their 13-acre site has everything you need for the garden, including all the accessories, all the beautiful Talavera pottery from Mexico, pottery from really all over the world. Here are a couple of websites for you, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Green Things in their 53rd year of business, and they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, this is just one of these days that I don't even have time to take a breath. There's so much breaking news. The news about Congressman Grijalva. We want to wish Congressman Grijalva all the best. He was scheduled to be my Friday Focus interview on Friday, and his staff called and said, Bill, he's just really been battling this pneumonia and is not going to be able to make it. And of course, we wished him well. And now we hear news today that he is battling cancer and having cancer treatment. So want to wish him well. And then we've got the news about President Robbins, UA President Robbins, announcing he'll step down in 2026 after fulfilling his contract. But he would leave earlier if the Arizona Board of Regents had another chose a new president, and Robbins said he would stay on during that contract period as he fulfilled his contract for a smooth transition. Well, we've got Troy Hutchison with us now to explore the angle of this story, the sports angle of the story. Troy is with GoAZCats.com. And he's a staff writer there. Hey, Troy, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's now, if this was another president, I'm thinking of Ann Weaver Hart, who was the president before, the predecessor for President Robbins, there wouldn't be that big a sports angle. Let's just put it that way. In the times I would interview Dr. Hart, she said, ask me any question, Bill, as long as it's not about sports. But here we have a president in Dr. Robbins who is really a huge sports fan.
Yeah, you know, I like to call him kind of the Jerry Jones of presidents. He's very much involved with the athletic department. And some good ways, some bad ways. You know, they kind of got the complete 360 of Ann Weaver Hart, one that really didn't care about sports to one that really did. And now you're seeing kind of the culmination of everything going on at the university from, $260 million deficit in total for the university, around that 86 to 118 million range for the athletic department being a part of that deficit. And now we're here at this point, because if you remember, I think it was around a month ago, President Robbins announced that he was going to be taking a pay cut to
10%.
Help with the
10%
credit,
right.
To help with the deficit. And clearly, you know, that's a great thing that he did that, but it wasn't enough. And you are seeing a resignation again till 2026. But if they get someone in that time frame, they'll be able to replace him. And I believe they would have to pay out the rest of his contract.
Probably,
if that does happen. So you're seeing just another move in the university, hopefully towards the right direction for the university, but it's all in the process of cleaning up this giant mess that has been created over the last 6-7 years.
We'll call what it. Is Rob, what's his influence with sports? We know he's a big sports fan, but he's been so involved with the big hires.
Yeah, you know, obviously hiring athletic directors, that's falls under presidential oversight. So he did bring in Desiree Reed Francois. He was the one that hired Dave Hickey, I believe. That might have been an Ann Weaver. I can't remember the timeline on that. But he was heavily...
I think Robbins hired Hickey.
I
could
believe,
be wrong, but I will go with that.
But he was very heavily involved in the hiring of Coach Jed Fish.
Yes.
Very much so involved in getting the process done with Coach Tommy Lloyd. Although that, you know, athletic directors know who they want and they go get who they want. They still need the president's sign off. And he was involved in that process. And then you have, you know, the hiring of Brett Brennan. He was part of that process as well. But going back to the Kevin Sumlin and Jed Fish era, those were very much President Robin hires and very much guys that President Robbins wanted. Sumlin was mutually agreed that, you know, they'll bring in Sumlin and That didn't work out very well. Jed was kind of the lower guy on the spectrum in terms of the list that everybody was coming out with and who thought the next Arizona football head coach was going to be. And then all of a sudden, it's Jed Fish. It was going to be Brett Brennan from what, you know, we understand that was going to be the guy.
But Robbins wanted Jed
and made the final decision. Mm-hmm. Jed comes in, you know, overhauls Arizona's athletic department and football program and kind of gets it back on the right direction, goes to Washington. In comes Brett Brennan. And Brett was supposed to be the guy before Jed, but now he is here after Jed, and Robbins was very much involved in all that.
And now Robbins was so involved with this transition, leaving the Pac-12 to go to the Big 12. And I wonder if you had still had someone like an Ann Weaver Hart who was not at all interested in sports, how that all would have happened.
You know,
because Robbins was so instrumental in that, and he kind of led the way for the other university, well, one of three, ASU, to join in UA and leaving the Pac-12. Some of your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, when talking to Dave and President Robbins during that time, their full focus was staying in the Pac-12 originally and giving them opportunity after opportunity to come up with a TV contract where it would meet all the needs of all remaining 10 universities, because at the time USC and UCLA had already left. And in fact, they did have San Diego State on hold, ready to join the conference. They had the paperwork done and everything, that they were able to get a TV contract done. So they gave them every last resort. Oregon, Washington dip out and say, you know what, we're going to the Big Ten. Sorry, they didn't even show up to the meeting, the final meeting. And it was at that point where Robbins said, you know what, we need to move in a different direction. Same with Utah, same with ASU. Those three were very much in line with one another. And once it was clear the conference couldn't be saved, they needed to move on and make sure that their universities were secure. Securing that, I think it was around 32 million per school in the Big 12. And really disintegrating the Pac-12, but the disintegration of the Pac-12 started with USC, UCLA, and really ended with Oregon, Washington moving along as well.
What about the two schools that are remaining, Washington State and Oregon State? Where are they going to be wind up?
They are still, quote unquote, part of the Pac-12 conference.
Are they going to try to resurrect, put together some kind of a Pac-12 group with San Diego State, San Jose State?
It's an interesting thing. I look at it more of like independence with keeping the name of the conference, because their schedule for football and basketball, and I'm sure softball and baseball will be the same, is going to be fully against teams from the from the Mountain West. So they're going to be playing Mountain West schools, but those will count as non-conference games for Mountain West schools. Same with Washington State and Oregon State. So all their games will be non-conference. They won't have any conference games besides playing each other, and they get the revenue that the Pac-12 is leaving behind. Really what they're doing is making sure they're able to keep that revenue and not having to share it without, you know, giving up their part.
Getting back to Robbins, the university president is so important in the future of this athletic department. Mm-hmm. I mean, who they bring in to be the president, will the person like what's going on in the athletic department? Will this person like the coaches? I mean, you've over at the athletic department today, I'm sure there's a lot of hand-wringing. Let's just put it that way. Would you agree or no?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends if you get somebody that
is... they have contracts, I understand, like Tommy Lloyd's contract had just been renewed through, like 5 years or something?
5-6 years, that range. Yeah. I think it really matters if you bring in somebody that is heavily involved in sports again, or if somebody that is, you know what, you guys handle that, I will sit back from
the sideline and handle
the university.
Yeah,
I think, honestly, even though President Robbins had a lot of friends in the athletic department and people that wish that he was probably still there, there is a certain level of ease when you don't have somebody hovering over you 24/7, when it might not be their job to hover over you 24/7 and more focused on the university as a whole. Because right now, this university, not only athletically, but just as a whole, needs somebody to fix it.
Yeah.
And athletics is just a small portion of that. There is a lot of issues at the U of A that need to be fixed, and you need to hire somebody that knows how to get that done, not only from an athletic standpoint, but as a whole group.
All right. Troy Hutchison sticks around from GoAZCats.com. Of course, we're going to get to basketball. Football is now underway. Spring camp. A lot to talk about with Troy after we take a break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Silver City and Grant County make a great getaway, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. You'll be very tempted by so many outdoor activities like the Gila National Wilderness, great place to do some outdoor activities, including hiking and camping. southwestnewmexico.org. Troy Hutchison is with us. He is our contributor on Wildcat Sports. Troy is the staff writer for GoAZCats.com. And again, let our listeners know, Troy, about GoAZCats.com.
Yeah, so it's part of the Rivals Association of Family, which is part of Yahoo Sports as well. GoEasyCats.com. We cover everything from Arizona football, basketball, women's basketball, softball, baseball, soccer, you name it, with a heavy focus on recruiting for football and basketball. But we have our message boards up and running, premium content from videos, podcasts, photography from spring football. I took a lot of photos the last couple days, but you know, you name it, we have it, inside information. So go ahead and check out GoAZCats.com. Also follow us on Twitter at GoAZCats as well. And it's run by myself, Troy Hutchison, and Also, Matt Moreno helps out still here and there.
And it is a subscriber-based
subscription-based website, which I believe right now we just ended a sale 50% off, so it is going back up to the $99.95 for the year.
At $9.95, I was going to say, boy, that's a...
$9.95 per month, which is still...
Well, that's not bad, $9.95. Yeah. As our friend Anthony Gimeno wrote... in his role, what is that group? PHNX. Mm-hmm. What is that called? Just that's
it's podcast.
Okay, podcast. But I printed out what he said because I liked his column so much. He said this time it was Clemson. Before those Tigers, it was the Princeton Tigers, and before them, Houston. Before the Cougars, it was Buffalo, Xavier, and Wichita State. So. Everybody's still talking about what in this town feels like a real early exit for the U of A basketball.
Yeah, you know, I think if you looked at how Arizona played throughout the season, losing in the Sweet 16 was definitely in the realm of possibility. But the fact that it was Clemson and not Baylor, where Clemson, you know, they play through their bigs and they did that against Arizona. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, those bigs turned into two Pau Gasol brothers, Mark and Pau Gasol, out there and started passing it amongst each other and really got them in trouble. The frustrating part, though, is when you're down by 13 and you make a comeback and you start going inside, seeing Umar Barlow have his 15-15 and really getting them in foul trouble, and that's how you get back in the game. In the final 5 minutes, you're chucking up threes. You're just kind of settling for shots.
And they were cold with the threes.
Yeah, not a lot of adjustments.
Ice cold.
And your best player goes, I think, what was it, 2-for-18 from the field in Caleb
Love.
2-for-18. You can't survive when Caleb does that. And the only way you do that is go inside. So, yes, it's some coaching, some bad luck with some, you know, horrible shot selection, and just a little bit lack of focus there. But overall, a Sweet 16 exit isn't necessarily a surprise. It's just because of who the opponent was.
Because we exit so often, though, early, many fans feel that we're no longer kind of an elite program. We're a good program, but if you look at elite, like top 10, we are not.
No, and growing up, I would have considered Arizona in that 8 to 10 range of a top 10 program. But over the last 23 years...
Since Lute left.
Even when Lute was there, you know, they lost to Illinois in the 05 Elite Eight, and they couldn't get over the hump.
And Santa Clara, too, I believe.
Santa Clara was a little bit earlier than that. But Sean losing in three Elite Eights, two of which came down to the final shot. If you haven't made a Final Four in the past 20-something years, you're no longer elite.
No.
You're a very good program, but to get back to that elite level, Arizona needs to make a Final Four in the next 3 years, I would say, because they've had the talent not only to make a Final Four. I mean, that's really the bare minimum in terms of standards. They've had the talent to win it. Now, are you going to make a Final Four and win it every year? No, but maybe make a Final Four once every 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. That's the pace that you see a lot of programs like Michigan State, UConn, Kentucky, Kansas, mm-hmm. Duke, North Carolina, you name it, those programs are doing that. And Arizona hasn't been able to do that really since the mid to late 90s and a little bit into the 2000s.
Well, your colleagues in the sports media business are, of course, getting a lot of fans saying that they're blaming Tommy Lloyd.
You know, I think obviously coaching is always part to blame if you lose. I mean, that's just how it is. And coaches understand that, you know, you make adjustments and you can only adjust so much, where if it's not going in, it's not going in. But you didn't see the adjustments made in the last 5 minutes. And I think Tommy knows that. And sometimes when you have your best player having an ice cold game, where do you turn to? Because you've seen throughout the season, outside of Caleb Love, and Umar in the paint, but when you have a big guy as your go-to, it's really difficult. There was no guy that said, give me the darn ball and get out of the way besides Caleb Love.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that number two that does that, then your options become very thin. And I know Jaden Bradley was playing very well. He had 18 points, and people are saying, well, why didn't he start and, you know, this and that. The only thing I would criticize is you can't have Jaden and Kylan 2 minutes off the performance given out there on the court. Jada needed to take that front role. Maybe that's the only criticism there, and Kylan backed off on his minutes. I think I would have done that adjustment. But again, when your ice, when your best player goes ice cold, it is hard to draw up stuff when you've been drawing up stuff for him all year long.
This team and or whatever, whoever is left or the reconstituted team will have to be a tough team physically now as we go into the Big 12.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a dogfight every week. I mean, and Arizona fans, you know, they're used to winning
more
the Pac-12.
More of the finesse teams on the Pacific Coast.
Not only the finesse teams, but blowout wins throughout the week, getting the job done.
That ain't gonna
in the
happen.
Big 12, it's you might win the conference with seven losses.
Yeah.
And you got to feel comfortable with that because, yes, they're losses, but it's also a growing process through pain in the
Big
12.
It is a basketball conference.
To me, it is level to what the Big East used to be in the 90s, mm-hmm. maybe even ahead of that. So it's going to be a battle every week.
Okay, you've been out at spring football. You were taking pictures, as you pointed out, for GoAZCats.com. What do we make of the football program now as they transition into the to the Big 12 with more of the focus now to the east of us rather than the west?
Yeah, you know, I think it's still early in camp, but what I've been liking to see, what I like to see during this time, this early period in training camp, even with previous staffs, is how are they coaching these kids? What is their demeanor like out there on the practice field? You know, Jed was a very, I don't want to say general, like he was a very go easy guy, but also he had his hand everywhere, making sure everything was going okay. You always heard his voice on the football field, mm-hmm. which there was nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Where you look at Coach Brennan, when they're in one-on-one drills, and when I say that, I mean more position drills mm-hmm. With their position coaches. Brennan's off to the side, you know, talking to the boosters, talking to recruits that are on campus, talking to people around the program.
He's delegated to these people and let them do it. Right?
And he trusts them, especially when you have Akina as the DC.
Yeah.
You have Dino Babers as an offense coordinator mm-hmm. and Danny Gonzalez as a linebacker coach. I know Dwayne wasn't a head coach, but he has head coaching experience basically with how long he's been around. You have guys that can do what they need to do, but when they break out of those and they go to either one-on-one drills versus other positions or 7-on-7, 11-on-11, he is very much hands-on. Mm-hmm. And their receiving core is going to be very much coached up because Brennan, being an ex-receiving coach at Oregon State before he became the head coach at San Jose State, he's giving them tips. Bobby Wade's giving them tips. So those mm-hmm. receivers are going to be very locked in this season. But one interesting thing I've seen is, especially from the tight end coach, Matt Atkins, these coaches move around. They won't only coach their position. They'll go coach up some other kid on this side of the field or go do that.
I like that.
And I know
that it's like they're, you know, everybody's got a hand in it.
Everybody's got a hand on it, and it's one message. I mm-hmm. think that's the most important part. It may seem a little bit odd to some people, mm-hmm. but if it's one clear message from the head coach down, then you can have a successful program doing that.
16 teams in the Big 12. Where will the Arizona football team, when the football magazines will be coming out before you know it, where will they place the Wildcats?
I think anywhere from third to fourth, somewhere in there. I think on paper they are one of the better teams in the Big 12 and probably one of the top 15 teams in the country. If they get their defensive end shored up and have those guys that can get to the quarterback and figure out that number two corner spot, I think you're looking at a team that can go 11-1 and go to the college football playoffs and win the Big 12.
That'd be great. All right, Troy Hutchison from GoAZCats.com, and that's where you go to find Troy and his work, GoAZCats.com. Troy, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Troy with me in studio and John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.